Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Dan Levinson, Inspector General of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Also joining our conversation from IBM is Brenda Kunkel. So, Dan, your office strives to reduce fraud, waste, and abuse across all HHS programs by conducting audits, investigations, and evaluations. So to that end, would you outline your strategic vision and key priorities for your office?
Sure, Michael. I think it's useful to understand that each of our components really views our portfolio from the standpoint of the expertise that they need to bring to bear. And let me give you an example of our Office of Investigations. We have hundreds of very, very qualified investigators who bring very impressive law enforcement backgrounds, and they need to bring all of that expertise to bear on an extremely diverse portfolio. To give an example, in fighting healthcare fraud, we see an incredible variety of schemes that need to be tackled. And it starts with what I would really call more like street crime. When I first came on board down in South Florida, for example, the programs were bleeding big money because of phony storefronts selling durable medical equipment, infusion therapy, you know, the kinds of scams that involve people who are not healthcare providers. They're masquerading as healthcare providers, costing the program billions of dollars because they were able to get billing numbers, and just based on the historic problem of too much relaxation in the enrollment process. We formed Strike Force in South Florida, and the Strike Force model has worked well. But working with our law enforcement partners, both at the federal and the state level, the billings in these kinds of phony scams have declined tremendously, saving taxpayer dollars in the billions of dollars range. And we brought many of these phony fraudsters to justice over the last few years as well. And now a lot of these street-level kinds of crimes, when you shut down some, you wind up with others because they tend to migrate where they think there might be vulnerabilities, where there's big money. So sometimes, we might go from DME to home health or to personal care services. But as the migration happens, we become also a more nimble, sophisticated team working cooperatively with law enforcement at all the levels. So, they have to deal with that kind of problem. They also have to deal with problems of healthcare providers. Recently, we brought to justice a doctor in Michigan who was giving chemotherapy to scores of his patients who didn't suffer from cancer, devastating the lives of scores of these patients. He's safe and secure in prison now. It's a good example of being able to use the hotline, being able to use the kinds of street news that you can get, keeping your ear to the ground, having boots on the ground that can actually respond when we hear that those kinds of nefarious schemes are going on among what are supposed to be healthcare professionals. So they have to deal with the potential frauds committed by providers, doctors, sometimes working in tandem with nurses and other healthcare professionals, as well as at times beneficiaries. And these problems can go right up to the executive suite. We've dealt with a number of major pharmaceutical companies in cases concerning off-label marketing, pricing scams for our programs. And, that means bringing white-collar executives to justice for trying to perpetrate frauds on our public health programs. So whether it's the street, whether it's healthcare providers themselves, whether it's executives in large companies within the healthcare industry, whether it's beneficiaries at times or people within the Health and Human Services Department itself, it's a rare occurrence. But there are vulnerabilities. There's possible exposure in a 360-degree way. And so our investigations office has to have eyes in back of their heads practically. They do a remarkable job. We have recoveries of billions of dollars over these last few years, and our return on investment is very impressive. We get many dollars back to the taxpayer for every dollar that's invested in OIG. Our auditors and our evaluators and our criminal investigators are really leading the way in being able to point to a more effective and efficient healthcare system.
So, Dan, what are the key internal and perhaps external drivers and trends that have shaped and informed your strategy?
Well, we've talked, Michael, about data analysis, the importance of being able to navigate data in a world now in which we're really relying upon computer technology to be able to give us a much better handle on being able to perform healthcare for a larger population in a way that really improves outcomes. This is part and parcel of a revolution that's going on in the delivery and payment of healthcare throughout the nation's healthcare system. And when I say throughout, I mean both public and private. Healthcare is simply viewed differently than it was in the 20th century. We now are thinking much more about being able to integrate the life sciences and the social sciences and provide better health care to populations. We now have a better understanding that there are many life choices that go into improving health care. And especially when you're dealing with programs that are focused on the elderly and on the disadvantaged, it's crucially important to understand from a variety of these perspectives what goes in to investing appropriately in improving the health care of the nation's population, and especially with respect to these cohorts. So as we bring on to the national platform new ways of delivering and paying for health care that no longer are based on the traditional fee-for-service system, where you simply bill for a particular practice or service, essentially a volume-based view of health care. As we move from volume to what we call value, to being able to demonstrate that the money invested in health care actually results in improved outcomes for individuals, the way of being able to compensate professionals for that and come up with systems where we can monitor true value and be able to align value with the money spent is an enormous challenge for policymakers, for the healthcare professions generally, and for us in being able to oversee this transition from fee-for-service to accountable care organizations and these new designs in coordinated payments. So that is what we're very much focused on, and we try to be good partners with the policymakers who are really on the ground trying to make this happen. So we, when the occasion is appropriate, we work with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services as they design new ways of providing health care and work with us to ensure that we've built in the appropriate internal controls, that we have that we've really thought through how to ensure that we can account for money in these new ways of being able to pay for health care.
That's a broad area of impact, and given finite resources, in evaluating potential projects to undertake, could you elaborate on the factors that go into deciding those projects and setting your priorities for the year?
Well, Brenda, we in many cases, we really have to do what is mandated by law in terms of our OIG reviews. Congress sets forth a number of directives to us about what we're going to review. And over the course of a typical year, we'll also get requests from members of Congress. We'll get requests from HHS management. We'll get requests from the Office of Management and Budget to focus on certain issues in the department as well. We also certainly want to work in a complementary way with GAO, because GAO is really our sister oversight agency in the legislative branch. And what GAO is looking at is not necessarily the kind of thing that we should be looking at for fear of duplicating services, which we really shouldn't do. So we think in terms of what the GAO portfolio for HHS looks like at any given time, and we try to compare that with ours. We want to make sure that we're having maximum impact. And as you can well imagine, although 1,600 people comprises a very large Inspector General's office, I don't believe there's a government OIG that's larger than ours. From a departmental perspective, it's a very modest size organization. There are, in truth, only 1,600 people for a $1 trillion portfolio. So we really do need to think both in terms of where we can focus on the maximum positive impact in how we try to select what is best for our office to focus on, and how we can work very horizontally with our oversight partners to cover as much territory as we can so that there is no area that's left untouched.
So if someone wanted to gain an understanding of how OIG's priorities have changed over the years, how would you suggest they go about doing that?
Well, Brenda, I don't think there's any resource that would be better than our website. We have some wonderful experts in how to present information on the web, and they have done a remarkable job of giving the public a website that could be navigated easily and is very worthwhile in how it presents so much useful information in a very easy to navigate way. We issue many important publications that can be followed on the web. We have our semi-annual report to the Congress that appears. We have our compendium of unimplemented recommendations, where we highlight the important recommendations that we've made but the department has yet to address. We post our top management and performance challenges, the challenges that we view as facing HHS most important to be addressed. We post our work plan. We provide information on our reports. We have our most wanted list. So if you want to know who's on the top list in terms of the people we're looking for who we believe have committed serious healthcare fraud, it's all on the website. And very importantly, we have a lot of very, very useful compliance tools. We work as much as we can with the healthcare industry to provide useful materials so that they can do the best possible job in complying with what is admittedly a very large and, in many cases, detailed set of rules, regulations, guidance. How they can best do that is left to them. But what we try to do through a variety of different materials, everything from written material to podcasts, is that we provide very useful guides for being able to come up with the most effective kinds of compliance plans and compliance operations for their particular industry. So we have compliance program guidance for hospitals, for nursing homes, for the pharmaceutical industry, you name it. We have very detailed guidance that is easily accessible through our website.
Dan, through some of our conversation, you've kind of alluded to some of the top management performance challenges facing the department. Perhaps you could briefly identify some of those for us.
Sure, Michael. Every year, as every IG is supposed to do, we do issue top management challenges. This is a process that goes back, again, now about a decade and a half. And we have produced about 10 or 11 of these top management challenges for a number of years. A number of them relate to what has been said before, but again, because of the dynamic change going on in our programs in the department, these are big subjects that never completely go away, but sometimes need a fresh view or a different nuance in being able to understand where we are at any given time. So this includes protecting an expanding Medicaid program from fraud, waste, and abuse. It includes the meaningful and secure exchange and use of electronic information and health information technology. It includes ensuring the appropriate use of prescription drugs, reforming delivery and payment in healthcare programs, as I alluded to earlier, and effectively operating public health and human services programs. I add that to note that although most of our time and resources are spent on Medicare and Medicaid, we also have a growing portfolio of very important work in the other programs that comprise the department.
How does HHS's Inspector General use collaboration and partnership to enhance oversight and government performance? We will ask Dan Levinson, Inspector General of HHS, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.